Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Osio Ginalii Tohiju Toigu, which means, hello cousins, I'm fine, how are you? This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau in east central Tennessee, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the old Cherokee Nation.
Well, hello everybody. It's your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from Booger County and the mysterious Ozarks of Mid-America, and we're talking tonight with the, well, the hat he's going to wear tonight is the Reverend Doctor, Robert Goswell.
Oh, wait a minute. Got to get my other hat.
Yeah, got to put on your, what do they call those hats?
Well, when I do that, I put on my Cherokee hat.
Yeah, we'll get into that. We're going to talk about origin of Christmas, and Dr. Goswell's put up a whole bunch of new stuff on his website at robertgoswell.com. And you go to robertgoswolf.com, click on the snowman, and then we'll just turn him loose. And, you know, with the information explosion all over the world, there's a lot of good stuff out there, information about origins of a lot of things. And so tell us all about it. You've been doing some web work this week.
Yeah, well, it's been it sort of became a traditional thing because this is the second year I did Halloween, and I always get a lot of response to that, and everybody said, well, why don't you do something about Christmas? And so I did something about Christmas, and because it's really, you know, it's an amazing story, Christmas. And a lot of people in these days, when it's not fashionable to like religion, I was just listening to, I was listening to the Bill O'Reilly show, and they had they had this comedian on there. She said, you know, what kind of a country is this? The Ku Klux Klan can march all over the place and burn thick crosses on people's lawns. That's okay, but God forbid they should have a Christmas tree in front of them. They'd be stopped. You know, so it's like we live in a world where it appears that darkness is starting to touch everything. The tentacles of the shadows are touching everything. And if you say, I mean, kids are being punished in school for talking about Christmas. You know, towns are being admonished because they put up a nativity scene. And it's like, where does this holiday really come from, you know, and what is it about? And I'm certain that a lot of people don't really know. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of information out there, but the information doesn't usually touch things like this. Christmas is a very old holiday, and while I was putting this website together, what I became amazed about was how interwoven that the whole season is, and actually the month of December is a month filled with holidays everywhere, all relating to the origins of Christmas, which started out to do with the old calendar. You know, first we had the, for centuries we worked on the, almost the same calendar as the Mayans. And then everything was changed during the Roman times. So we went to the Juno calendar, and then from the Juno calendar we went to the Gregorian calendar, and everything keeps getting changed around. We got changed from 14 months to 12 months. Originally we were 20 months. So it's like, you know, people just, and organizations just arbitrarily put dates and things in, and Christmas was basically created after the fall of the Roman Empire, and it was developed through the Dark Ages, where the church was trying to make friends, and I suppose that they decided how many people can we have the Jesuit monks kill in order for the them to fulfill the edicts of the Papal Bulls. You know, people don't realize that those were executive orders from Rome, by the way. I mean, like the things that happened here with Native Americans, it was orders by Rome. And so what they decided was, instead of killing all these people and have the Inquisition get paid for overtime, they decided to adopt holidays and change dates. And it became favorable and convenient for them to celebrate the birth of Christmas, which was the birth of Jesus, on or about the time of the pagan ceremonies that had to do with their New Year rebirthing celebrations, which took place around the winter solstice. Most today they call us native religions, or nature religions. And we tended to have our religions and important dates of celebration play in with different times of the year having to do with constellations and seasons. So we did the dance around the wheel with nature, and we had the equinoxes and the solstices, which were very important. They marked times of change. And we go into the winter solstice, which was, you know, December 21st, as it worked out. You know, December is the month when winter is in its deepest position, when the darkness becomes the longest because the nights become shorter. So what happens on solstice is it's the shortest night of the year, opposite of June 21st, which is the longest night of the year. So the darkness is the longest, and that represented to the old way the death of the year before, so to speak, metaphorically, and the rebirth of a new new sun, S-U-N. And it was the cycles of rebirth and reincarnation, and all things would be renewed. It was the promise of tomorrow. It was the a very involved ceremony that lasted several weeks. Starting out prior to Christmas with the Advent, which was the, turned into the Feast of the Epiphany, which is where we get our Christmas wreath from. And the Christmas wreath has to do with old Germanic, Nordic, Celtic customs by which they brought in a wreath of evergreen because it represented everlasting life. And the candles were lit as rays of hope. And the bringing in of the new year, they were placed in four candles were used on the wreath and placed in the four directions, the four cardinal directions, and the flames were lit. Now, that holiday and that practice is also very similar to the Hanukkah ceremony, you know, which happens about the same time of the year. And that goes into a process that takes, like I said, several weeks. And then we come up to the actual solstice season. They conveniently put it on December 24th. This way they wouldn't be accused of exactly doing it on the 21st. And that brings us into the 12 days of Christmas, which is, it takes us into January 6th. And, the interesting thing about that is like Hanukkah, every day is a celebration of giving and sharing and, making affirmations about the new year, and it's spiritually supposed to be about letting go of that which you no longer need, that which senselessly and uselessly fills up our lives, and to adopt new resolutions about things that you're going to do in the new year, which is culminated on January 6th. So that's the simple explanations of it. The interesting thing is that the whole Christmas ritual comes from what would have been called, you know, as I said today, they call us native or nature religions, and what we used to be referred to simply as pagans, heathens. And they came, all these ceremonies came from the pagan practices and pagan traditions, the Yuletide, the Yule log. Yule begins approximately on just before Christmas Eve, and it's the process of bringing in the Yule log, which was a simple way of having large ceremonial bonfires, which come again from the Celtic ceremonies. And I know that things today with people, we don't really have a ceremony around Christmas, do we? I mean, everything's become like totally commercial. It's all about buying gifts and getting a new Lexus for somebody. And you're made to feel like something's wrong if you don't spend a lot of money and buy a whole lot of gifts. But the giving that Christmas was born with has to do with the spiritual giving. It has to do with the inner giving, the giving of self. And that was one of the things that always interested me, because as a child, I was raised Catholic, and I walked away from the Catholic Church at a very early age, and started to investigate realities of life. And one of the things that always amazed me was that Native American religions have a lot of ceremony. You know, there is no such thing, as Grandpa would say, or as Grandpa used to say, as Native American religion. It's just a way. It's a spiritual understanding. It's a mutual understanding that varies not only from tribe to tribe or nation to nation, but also varies from clan to clan, how each one would specifically celebrate their ceremony. But ceremony was always graciously embraced and brought in, and it strengthens people. It puts people into a full body, mind, spirit act of participating in what that holiday or that event is about. Where today it's like, okay, let's go in and let's do it. And, you know, and what happens with Christmas today, of course, is everybody suffers from the post-mortem Christmas blues right after the holidays when they get their credit card bills and they're all broke for the next 4 months. And instead of being something that renews life and feeds us spiritual strength, that enables us to get through the hard times, to walk out of the shadows and walk back into the light. The actual solstice ceremonies were often called or referred to as the heart, the light from the heart of the universe, which is what they celebrated, was the rebirthing of the light, the rebirthing of sun and spring, the rebirthing of life renewing itself, the rebirthing of the light within the soul.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater. Would you think twice about defending yourself or a loved one from an intruder? In this day and age, would you dream of leaving your doors unlocked at night for fear of being burglarized or even attacked or worse? Would you? But when it comes to our own bodies, the doors to our houses are wide open all the time. The very air we breathe and the food we eat, especially here in the United States, creates free radicals that cause us to age and in some cases cause illness, some of which are deadly. Now, for the first time in history, there's a supplement called Protandim that is listed on the U.S. government's PubMed.gov website with many peer-reviewed studies all showing that Protandim is a proven killer of the free radicals that are aging and in some cases even killing us. Now, I'm not talking about killing one molecule of free radical per one molecule of antioxidants like the stuff we've been taking. I'm talking about killing 1 million free radicals per second, per molecule, and this is the very same antioxidant your own body produces. Protandim superchargers your body to create much more than it does without Protandim. There's an old saying that we are warned about in the scriptures. That's the attitude, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. So let me ask you, how much money do you spend on food a day? If you're out shopping or at the beach, would you think anything of spending a buck or even more on a can of soda? If there was a vending machine that sold something that killed what was aging you or even killing you, would you even hesitate to spend a buck and a half a day? Well, now there is such a vending machine, and it's sitting right in front of you. It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Hi, friends. This is Will Bluewater. I have a message here from 1975 from John Wayne. It comes right out of today's headlines. So you Indian folks who are following the progressive trend in politics, you're following the people that supported slavery. You're following the people that have enslaved you ever since the Civil War. Listen to John Wayne.
You know, it's a funny thing, the Indians now, this AIM group have started something that now they're against me for some reason, but I am the only man in pictures that always gave them their human dignity. I never was in a picture. I never allowed myself at any time to do anything that would take their human dignity away from them, and that to me is the most important thing in a man. I have found that a certain type that calls himself a liberal, and I always thought I was a liberal. I came up terribly surprised one time when I found that I was a right-wing conservative extremist. When I have listened to everybody's point of view that I ever met, and then decide how I should feel. I mean, but this so-called new liberal group, Jesus, they never listen to your point of view, and they make a decision as to what you think, and they're articulate enough and in control of enough of the press to force that image out for the average person. For some reason, maybe it's these pictures, They have not been able to do that with me. In spite of what they say, people have not taken sides that I'm a, you know, it hasn't affected my career in popularity, let's say. In spite of the fact that they've tried to make it do it. There isn't a hell of a lot that we can do to change human behavior. We keep making laws to try and change human behavior. You can't do it. I think you can accept it and feel how you would feel in that position. You're being conned into Keynesianism and socialism now. But it isn't going to stop the selfishness of human behavior. It isn't going to stop the greed. If you take $20 and give a dollar to every son of a bitch in a room, and come back a year later, one of the bastards will have most of the money. I mean, it's just human nature, and they're not gonna whip it with a lot of laws. I think when you make people conscious, as communication gets better, and you make people conscious of somebody in trouble, starving or something like that, the average person will help. But of course now they've got so damn many charities and there's so much professionalism, you know, if you have a charity, you hire some professionals to work up the charity, and by the time you get the money, you get $4 for the recipient and $400 for the administrators. So, I mean, Christ, I think there are people who try to affect a thinking where they know more than some other son of a bitch and try to put a false impression on what human nature is. Christ's sakes, we have proven that we go back to hope at the first opportunity. Just throw out a little fish and bam, they're out there ready to grab it. So we are optimists. We have to be optimistic. Christ, what else would there be in life if you lose optimism?
And these are pagan statements, okay? They're not Christian statements. And then the other thing that always lately has me really aggravated is, you know, they're not going to take away Santa Claus. I won't let them do that. I refuse to even acknowledge them. But they shot John Lennon. They shot our heroes. I'm not going to let them shoot Santa Claus. So, are you there?
Have you ever run across the Old Testament prophecy about the Christmas tree?
Yeah, I have.
It's interesting. The one I'm talking about where it really warns against it. You know, it says something about, you know, that time of year or that ceremony in which they bring the tree into the house, set it up and nail it to the floor, and it's kind of interesting to see them. Of course, the ancient Judaism looked at anything pagan, like they weren't allowed to participate in it. They don't even, an Orthodox Jew won't even use, he won't say Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, because that's all pagan. He'll say Sabbath, first day, second day, so and so and so forth.
Right, right.
And yeah, they're not allowed to do any of that. It's really, they look at it all as pagan, and so they have the Hebrews have always had a complete reason why they have a completely different calendar. Was it 57, 65, or 66 years?
Well, you know, the biggest difference between things that I do and things that the church does or has done is that the ceremony makes it part of your life. It makes it part of the people. The church came along and literally took away all ceremonial practice from the people, essentially. And only the priest could perform it, you know.
Right.
So the priest, you know, if you get into the costumes and symbolism of the Church of Rome, it's a very interesting thing. Sinister laugh, he giggles. But like, they've got all the symbols and all of the ceremonies down, including the way they lay out their churches, according to ancient cults.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's totally ancient cults. The whole. I've always been amazed at a religion, whatever that is, and that number one, someone would feel that we needed it, that we weren't able to communicate with the Creator on our own. But the thing with the religion is that, you know, they've got to do it for you. You don't have the right to do it for yourself. You can never call God directly. Remember that joke that was going around years ago that Wallace started? And the Lakota chief goes over to Rome, and they're showing him all the rooms in the Vatican, and he sees this little room in the corner, and he goes, the door's closed, you know. And he goes, what's that room? And the Pope goes, oh, that's just my private room. And he goes, well, can I see it? So the Pope, his eyes sort of shift, and he reaches into his little purse and pulls out a golden key, and he opens up the door. The Lakota walks in with the Pope, and they're sitting there, and all that's there is a table, a chair, and a telephone. And the Lakota goes, what's that for? He goes, that's where I call God. Oh. Can I call your God? I would like to speak to your God. So the Pope rolls his eyes back and says, okay, but you have to put a credit card in the phone. So the Lakota looks at him and goes, don't have a credit card. Pope rolls his eyes again and says, here, use mine, okay? So he gets in and he puts his credit card in, and what he gets is a recorded message. With the choirs and everything else. That's the phone call. Oh. So the next year, the Pope comes over here, and he's traveling around, and he goes to the Lakota village, and there's the chief, and he's showing him, you know, the whole place, and he's showing him the sacred teepees and the arbor where they do the sun dance, and he's showing him all these things, and the Pope notices this little white teepee off in the woods, and he goes, what's that? He goes, oh, that's my special ceremonial teepee. So he says, well, can I see it? I'll let you see my special place. So the chief sort of looks down on the ground and goes, sure, why not? They walk over and they lift back the flap and they go into the teepee. And there's buffalo robes and eagle feathers hanging in there. And there's blankets on the floor. And there's a telephone. And the Pope looks and sees the phone. He goes, what's that for? He goes, that's what I call Pankashala. The Pope goes, oh, could I speak to your God? And the chief goes, well, I don't know. It's not customary. And the Pope whips out his credit card. He says, don't worry, I got a credit card. And the chief looks at him and goes, oh, don't worry. It's a local call.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like, you know, looking at things in humor, we have to look at things in humor because this place can be a very funny place.
Oh, yeah.
But the sadness comes in that the ceremonies have been taken away from people's lives, and over the generations, look at what has happened to Western civilization, who was once not very different than the native people here. As a matter of fact, a lot of the traditions that the native people have here actually came from the ancestors of the Western Europeans who came here thousands of years before and set up these ceremonial practices and calendars with the native people here.
Well, Ed McGaugh believes that there was an interchange between...
Absolutely, an interchange. And the other thing is that the Western European societies were very tribal. And they had ceremonies, you know? And
sure.
They wore feathers and amulets and did things at the solstice and the equinox, just like the native religions do.
Like, where did the Cherokee get the Hebrew double-sided drinking vessel for, you know, it's just like the Hebrew wedding, you know.
Right.
They even stomp on it and break it.
Right.
This is amazing.
Yeah, well, the other thing is if you go to the old traditional Cherokees and say, what's the name of your God, they'll tell you it's Jehovah.
Yeah. Yahweh.
You know, but Yahweh seems to predominate.
Yahweh, yeah.
And Yahweh is, that goes back to Egypt. And, you know, we get into the different personalities, which I'm not going to get into right now. That's a whole other conversation. I mean, if we get into the Bible, they had like, you know, how many, the Hebrews had seven different names for God. I mean, essentially there were seven different gods, you know. And for 500 years, they couldn't even say the name of God. And the only thing that they could relate to when they would finish something was the terms that they used in Egypt, which they exited it from. And so at the end of all prayers, even to this day, they say Amen, which is Amun, for the god Amun of Egypt. So the interrelation and the interweaving of symbols and customs and traditions is really a global thing. It's an amazing global thing.
Well, it's amazing. You get a Hebrew scholar and a Christian scholar and a Muslim scholar together. The similarities are just stunning.
Well, I think it's interesting that some of the most intimate, clear stories about Yeshua, Jesus, are in the Quran. There's really very little said in the Bible. And, you know, each one of the apostles got to write the book, and they all wrote the same book.
Yeah, pretty much.
And, you know, if we read the Bible, you know, so what we have to do is go into those little Greek letters in the back to tell us who edited it and when. And the thing today is that a lot of that is being washed away because the world's too small, Otter. And the ancient texts are being revealed, and they're coming up, and we're finding text in Tibet, and we're finding text in Egypt, the Coptic texts. And then we found there's a whole body of work that was found with the Dead Sea Scrolls, which has never yet been released publicly, because a lot of the texts don't necessarily harmonize or run parallel with the text that the church approved for the Bible.
Well, it's not just that. The professor, the paleographer that did a lot of the translation, he's at Ben-Gurion University down in University of the Negev? I can't remember, but he, when he was asked about... Now you got to understand that Dead Sea Scrolls were written by the temple priesthood that were put out by the fake temple priesthood, which was the Sadducees, the descendants of Zadok. The real ones took off and went to Qumran when the ones forced themselves in that didn't have the proper genealogy and known to us as the Sadducees. So they went off to Qumran and they started writing and revealing. It was revealed that Yehoshua was an ordained Ribbi, and a lot of interesting things. Anyway, when this paleographer was asked why there was so many differences between modern rabbinical Judaism and ancient rabbinical Judaism, he basically said, hey, you know, all I do is translate it. I can't help it. What happens after that, you know? So it's interesting. Huh? There's been a lot of changes in Judaism. Basically, they didn't do a lot of writing about, they didn't do any writing at all about Jesus until after Constantine started doing bad things.
After the Nicene Council.
Yeah.
And where everything was sanitized and brought into a formula that fit not only the Roman outlook, but the Roman politics.
And they didn't start persecuting Jews until 400 years after Jesus died. And...
Well, they were still doing it in the 1930s.
Yeah, well, and then so you, in the dark and Middle Ages, you have a lot of vitriolic stuff that was written in the Talmud about Jesus that he, you know, was supposedly the bastard son of a Roman soldier and all this other kind of stuff. But it, you know, it was a reaction to, you know, some of the really negative stuff that the church was doing. And, but it's interesting, you know, the Catholic Church is starting to make noises like maybe we're worshiping the wrong Sabbath. And Mormons are starting to agree, and they're starting to look into it. It's interesting because there's just too much evidence out there. Well, it's the restoration of all things spoken of in the Bible. There's so much, too much information not to be able to restore a lot of original things.
Well, as the Lakota say, "Ahomi Takwi Asin."
Yep.
We're all one. We all come from the same Mother and Father God. And the prophecies bespeak that we'll be entering a time during this emergence where a new religion will come, and that's emphasized in various tribal cultures or nations. And the Hopi, who refer to the coming of the long-lost little brother, younger brother, which is the proper term, it was never white brother, it was younger brother. Anyway, when he returns with the piece of the missing tablet from the Hopi, he'll also bring his. And his way that he will bring with him is not a way of any religions. It's a whole new way. And that this will begin the birthing of a new religion that will move through the world, because it'll be a religion of natural spirituality, and it will embrace all peoples. That's just what prophecies say.
Well, that's very threatening, though.
So, you know, since 90% of the prophecies seem to be happening.
Yeah.
I mean, the fireballs are coming, and the storms are coming, and the wind is coming, and the volcanoes are blowing up all over the place. I mean, we're getting every warning sign we can get, right? And, you know, I mean, we've got hurricanes now, you know, bigger than the state of Texas.
Yeah.
And we just had one a couple of days ago. I mean, excuse me, this is December. Hello?
Right.
And we have a new hurricane in the Atlantic. It's like, okay, you know.
Well, can you see
and that whole thing that was going on with the hurricanes and everything. Did you see the weather? Did you pay any attention to the weather last week? It was the most bizarre weather I ever saw.
Oh,
on one side of this narrow belt, it was like a belt that went north and south. On the east side of it, everything was in the 60s and 70s with high winds. In the middle of it, you had tornadoes and hellacious lightning storms. On the west side of it, you had blizzards and snow. I mean, they had over 6 feet of snow in the Denver area.
That's incredible.
That was all within a couple of days, all happening at the same time. While they were having tornadoes in Texas and Kansas.
Yep.
So all the prophecies are starting to come through, so maybe it's time to pay a little attention.
Creator was right. He told me,
Or else I guess people can, you know, wait until Sean David Morton tells them what's going to happen.
Creator told me in 98 that 2005 was going to be the year of the Great Havoc. Well, we've got it. Now, can you see how threatening the Hopi prophecy, some of it might be to you know, the reason why I asked is I was watching, I never have watched any of those videos or reading those books about the Left Behind theory.
Right.
And fundamentalist Christians, you know, they've got their very cut-and-dried versions of what they believe is going to happen. And, of course, they believe that anything, a lot of them believe that, it's like I was listening to Hal Lindsey the other night on Coast to Coast, and he was asked, well, what do you think about the Mayan prophecies and all these things coming to a head right now? And his answer was, well, he says, if it is, it's just a coincidence. And he's quite a scholar, but I just couldn't believe the paternalistic attitude. And, you know, and I...
Well, I'll give you a direct correlation to that that happened to me in the Yucatan. I am sitting there with 144 people. Ombudsmen, the Mayan priests and priestesses come. And they're people who don't normally come. We're at Chichen Itza, we're doing a ceremony. No, we weren't at Chichen Itza, we were at Uxmal. And we were doing a ceremony, and we're all out there doing the ceremony, and the ceremony takes us up to the top of the pyramid, where the Mayans, for the first time in many, many years, started singing songs in Mayan, okay?
And the little kids came running up. I mean, it was amazing. It was like, you know, we were all huffing and puffing by the time we got to the top of the pyramid. But, you know, these little kids came running up like chipmunks up the side of it. Because they'd never heard this, you know. And so we're sitting here and we're doing these songs and we're sort of doing a harmonic om where, you know, the women would take certain tones and the men would take certain tones and it creates a harmonic when you do it. And above us in the pyramid, okay, because it was a cloudy day, above us in the pyramid, the sun comes up. This actually happened. The sun comes up. There's a sun dog in the sky. And four condors are circling the pyramid.
Oh,
and we were with a bunch of Irish people who come from the, you know, from loyalty to the church, of course. You know. And they looked up and they said, "Look, what a coincidence." Well, Butch and I just looked at each other and sort of shrugged our shoulders. What coincidence? You know, this is the power of prayer. I mean, here's four condors flying through a rainbow, and the sun's coming out in a perfect circle around the top of the pyramid where we were just singing. But, you know, but again, you know, why do they get like that? And I think that the reason why they get like that is because all their participation in ceremony has been removed. They're sterilized.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osmond back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She is the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for a dollar. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and
right.
New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals. And, you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken-tasting
right.
garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff. And I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed. It's convenient. Stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable. It's convenient. It tastes really good. Taste the peaches. They're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like dehydrated. And freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm trying it right now, Marie
Osmond.
Put it
under your bed, put it in your closet, give it for Christmas to people, and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
No, Marie Osmond, great having you on.
It's
the Wise
so fun
Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. This is a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
Yeah. Well,
they are emotionally and spiritually sterilized.
And anything that any hint of inclusiveness of cultures and bringing culture together, I mean, they're taught that that's Antichrist. Or that's what the Antichrist is going to do. You know, they're afraid that the Antichrist is going to do away with their religion and switch everybody over to this you know, gray one size fits all warm and fuzzy vanilla religion.
That's Walmart, isn't it?
Yeah.
A lot of these people are
very militant and carry guns, and they really believe that it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Well, you know, let's take Santa Claus. Let's take a minute here and look at.
But on the other hand,
Saint Nicholas.
Look at all the pagan stuff that they believe in, and they don't understand what it is. You know, they don't.
Well, the ways have been lost.
Yeah, they really don't know when Jesus was born. They celebrated it. I mean, they believe the Bible is just written in stone that it was, you know,
he was born on December 24th.
You know, it can't be, you know.
Unless you're a redneck. If you're a redneck, you listen to country music and you know that Jesus was a Capricorn.
Yeah, you know. And, well, actually, Did you hear about the fellow that wound back, you know, these computer programs, you can wind the sky back or forward, you know, to
increase. Right.
And he did his homework and there was
Star Quest or something like
well,
that.
Well, yeah, you know, there was, they knew that Jesus was born to her during a Roman census. Well, there was one 6 BC and one 6 AD. So he went for mid-April because that's when the shepherds are abiding in their fields. Because otherwise they're living in caves that they make themselves. You know, houses with stock lives underneath and then they live up above them. But anyway, he wound the sky back that period of time and found out that there was a very special astronomical configuration in the sky at that time too, and which he discovered that the astronomers or astrologers would have seen that sign, and that was the sign of Jupiter in the constellation of Aries, and Aries was the constellation of Judah. And to anybody that knew the prophecies, the three wise men or magi would have known that a king had been born. And it would have taken them, you know, probably close to a year to get from Persia to the Holy Land, because they showed up when he was an infant. He wasn't fit. But he pointed out that Herod had to inquire diligently of them about the star. But he was able to prove scientifically, you know, that.
So what was his conclusion?
Well, Jesus was born, I can't remember the exact date, April 6 B.C., had to be during a Roman census,
mm-hmm.
and Rome kept excellent records, and they had one 6 BC and one 6 AD, so he had a choice. When they went for the 6 BC date, they found out that during that period of time, for several days, the Jupiter, which was the largest planet in the sky, which represented kings, was in the constellation of Aries.
And, you know, he was basing it on contemporary astrology.
Well, yeah, he was on Coast to Coast, and they also did a History Channel thing on him, or Science Channel thing on that one.
Uh-huh.
Fascinating. Well, there's so much information coming out. It's just amazing.
Well, you know, everybody's intellectualizing things now. And they're forgetting that the whole matter is about spirit. It's about faith.
Right.
You know, historically, a lot of the things that the church has declared written in stone can be torn apart.
Oh yeah.
And so it was a matter of convenience and it was a matter of politics. And I've always been a person who held the belief that when you take spirituality and first you turn it into a religion, then you have to organize that religion. And you have to have officers, and you have to have, you know, subordinates, and you have to have all these different offices, and then you have to have districts. And then in order to keep track of that, you have to hire an accountant. So now what happens is that the religion becomes a corporation, and it's run by the accountants and the people keeping tally of different things.
That sounds a little bit like Ed McGaw was saying that the Lakota are thinking of doing something like that.
No comment.
Yeah, we'll take a hierarchy. Okay, we won't go there.
No comment. I won't. But, you know, it sort of would surprise me if they tried that, you know. But they wouldn't be the traditionals. They'd be the new ones coming out.
The Indians that are now the ones.
You know, it's like it's worked for 30,000 years, so let's change it.
A lot of people don't know AIM was started by City Indians, you know, and they all went to Leonard Kodak's father, knocked on his door, and he asked them if they'd been through, you know, they were searching and wanted to know how they could get out of their situation, you know, living in the city and drugs and alcoholism. And he just said, you know, come back and talk to me when you've gone through purification.
That's right.
And now these guys are calling.
Go to Inipi, then speak to me.
Yeah, now these guys are, you know, calling the shots and making the rules. So saying all the rest of us don't know nothing. Mm-hmm. Now the elders are dead. Those elders are dead. Pointing the fingers back and forth. Yeah, and old, what do you think about that prophecy? Sidney has no horses. What's going around to all of the tribal councils of the Seven Fires, the greater Sioux Nation, telling them that he was visited by, I think, one or two angels, Bigfoot, Chief Bigfoot, Chief Crazy Horse, and Sitting Bull all told him that if the seven fires don't get their act together unity-wise, it's going to be big trouble in, I guess, 5 months now.
So I think that they're interesting. I haven't totally validated them yet.
Yeah, and...
A lot of them are things that I've already heard.
Uh-huh.
And so I think there's a possibility that's being attributed to a source in an attempt to give it credence.
Yeah, we'll see.
And you know, a lot of those prophecies are fairly old, man. I mean, you know, they're old enough for me to remember being told.
Yeah. Well,
by elders who aren't here anymore.
I'll try to get
So the problem that I run into is I can't call up Uncle Pete Ketchus and say, hey, Uncle Pete, what do you think about this? Because they're not here, you know.
They supposedly made the announcement that made the rounds on the internet with me at the Cheyenne River Tribes. I mean, the Cheyenne River Tribes minutes, you know, eventually will go on their website. So it's just going on their website. But I've since heard it was at Indians.com. You know, he's been to some other meetings and it's been pretty well. You know, he talked about the opening of, I believe, the fourth pew.
Right.
Interesting. Interesting guy. I do have his phone number, and I figure if I keep trying after things kind of settle down, after the 20,000 other people calling, I might be able to interview him.
Well, it'd be interesting to hear them.
Yeah, sure would, wouldn't it, to interview that guy.
Yeah, I think that as much as we can get out from the other side and other people's perceptions in this world, the better off people are going to be, because, you know, we're in America. And, you know, people can or cannot accept the fact that the creation of America was divinely ordained. I guess it's all right if they say that, provided they don't carry a Christmas tree in front of them.
Well, and that's the other thing, too. You know, a lot of Native Americans are really anti-American, you know. But they got to understand, you know, there was a... You know, you read George Washington's prophecy and you understand how absolutely necessary it is for the Union. And even though I was raised as a Southern sympathizer because my family fought in the Civil War and captured, and they were Confederate officers, but captured the Battle of Big Black Bridge and spent the duration of Johnson Island. But anyway, George Washington prophecy says that it's extremely important for the United States to stay together as a union. Can you imagine what would happen? I mean, we'd all be speaking German and or Japanese now if, you know,
right,
if we didn't have a strong union. And, you know, for all its foibles, you know, America needs to be strong. But if you go back and read the Old Testament about what happened with Israel, when Israel became bad, Creator used their enemy to come after them and subdue them. And then when their enemy boasted of it, then he destroyed the enemy the next day to a man, killed them all with a mysterious plague of some kind. So,
well, I think it's also interesting and ironical. If you look at that whole particular period, that the symbol of the Nazis was the eagle, all right?
Yeah.
And the symbol of the Sumerians was the eagle.
Yep.
So once again, the tribes of Israel had the eagle above their head.
Ephraim did, and Ephraim was the most rebellious tribe. They were the ones that had the there was two royal houses, House of Joseph, they went off and had the northern kingdom. They're the ones that started practicing horrible things in their temple, and eventually they just left, crossed the river Sambatyon, and, King of the Southern Kingdom invited him back, and the four heralds that he sent, their bodies were sent back, and minus their heads, and so they made it pretty clear that they weren't interested. There's a lot of people today that claim to be their descendants, but they also claim to be, you know, descendants of Israel. But it's made pretty clear in the Old Testament that they divorced themselves from that and they became Gentiles.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's like there's all these people now making claim to be connected to Zion.
Well, like the, you know, the English claim to be, you know, all the Norse people. Well, there was a breakout of Benjamin, a separate breakout from the breakout of the 10.5 lost tribes. We know that Benjamin went, and there the matter of fact, the blessing that Benjamin was given was that he would be a father of a nation and nations.
Uh-huh.
And there was an incident of a rape of a Hebrew woman by their friends, the Phoenicians, and they refused to subdue the Phoenicians and bring them in under Israel. So the other 11 tribes all went against little bitty Benjamin and killed him down to almost the last man. There was a few men in one little town, I think 60 men. They killed the whole tribe down to about 600 men, yeah. And they took wives from the other tribes. And, of course, tribal lineage, you know, comes through the father. And the religion comes through the mother. But, you know, the rabbis in Jerusalem know a lot.
Well, they know a lot they're not talking about.
Oh, yeah, they know where people went. They know exactly where. And
I remember a particular rabbi who I know, who we'll just call him Rainbow Rabbi. And he does work for the University of Jerusalem, and he goes over there quite often because he's an expert in ancient languages and specifically Old Hebrew. And I showed him some of the stones and plates that I found here in America in the Rockies.
Right.
And he was looking at it, and he spent 3 days at my house. I was living in Washington State at the time. And he spent 3 days in my house, and we went to all these things and looked at them, and I said, so what do you think? He said, well, he says, actually, a lot of what I'm reading, he says, you know, first I had to get over the amazement that these things were found here. He said, and they're written in the ancient tongue. They're not written in a contemporary language, so there's some validity to it. Did you do forensics on the stones? I said, yeah. We did forensics, and some of them come from 1800 BCE. Some of them are as old as 2500 BCE. And some of them are more recent. Some of them are 900 AD. And what he concluded in his interpretation, as far as he would go, is that there was a lot of writing here that was very similar to the black Israelis, the ones from, you know, there was Solomon and Sheba, and Sheba in Nigeria. Was it Nigeria? Up by Mount Kilimanjaro.
Yeah,
It was the black Jews.
Yeah, Ethiopia.
Ethiopia. And the black Jews who claim today to have the Ark of the Covenant there, right? But it spoke the same things as some of the copper scrolls that he was interpreting over there. And I said, well, would you make a statement? Would you be willing to go on the radio with me or something? Or let's make a statement for, archaeological magazine or something. And he went, I can't do that, Robert. He says, I've been a rabbi in my family now. It's been 7 generations that we've been rabbis. He said, I have a good life. I can't bring out what these stones are talking about. Okay? What they were talking about was they were talking about the priesthood of Aaron, Moses' brother, coming over here and being here and spreading the word. Okay? Some of these things have been misinterpreted as, you know, the Jesus stones from Kentucky and Minnesota and this stuff. And he said they're not about Christ at all. And here's a guy with a burning bush, and there's a temple, and there's things like this. He says, but it's not Moses, it's Aaron. Because these symbols right here, and he showed me, he says, that refers to Moses' brother. So it's pretty interesting, you know, what's here. What got me into cryptoarchaeology was the fact that I spent so much time with elders here from South America to Canada, and everything that was in the history books was that which was translated, blessed, and interpreted by Western Europeans. If it didn't go through them, if it didn't go through the British Museum or the Belgian Museum or the Museum of Jerusalem, I mean the College of Jerusalem and the University of Israel, then it couldn't possibly be, because how could these people know about this stuff? And yet it's everywhere. It's everywhere. And the symbols. can even be found down in the Yucatan and down in Belize. Okay, so this place has for a very long time been cosmopolitan with different people from different places. And the spirituality that is here is accumulation, a compilation of various beliefs that rang true. If you just go into the stories of the Pale Prophet, which people can go to my website at robertgoswolf.com, and there's a whole section there on the Golden Braid that talks about Christ's experiences here in America and the evidence of Christ being in America, and all of the books and everything that talk about him, and the different names that he had from different tribes. It's very old, and it's all interwoven. There's no separate. The only separations are in our minds.
Well, the traditional Cree medicine man up at Saskatchewan, one of them told Red Elk that they knew that he came and he brought James with him.
Yes.
And they called Jesus Weesackajack. It's interesting now. Weesack is Isaac, a Jack is Jacob. And they begged him not to go back to Jerusalem. They said, if you go, they're going to kill you. And he said, I know what, I got to go. And then later he came back and showed them the nail prints. You know, it's either their story or they got it from the Jesuits. You were up there pretty early. Hard to tell.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It's the little yellow pill that scientists say could eliminate chronic diseases and help you live well into your hundreds.
You might be able to increase the lifespan of a mammal by 50%. And, of course, if that was a human being, then that might be in the order of 130 to 150 years.
That claim might be hard to swallow. But tonight on ABC's Primetime Live, co-anchor John Quinones takes the promising antioxidant therapy called Protandim.
I have become a guinea pig for ABC News and Primetime. It's not a drug. It's a supplement. It's called Protandim, and it's a combination of five exotic plants that have been around for centuries.
Have you discovered the fountain of youth?
I wouldn't put it that way, but we may have discovered something that will tell us a lot more about how we age, what happens biochemically, and maybe how we can slow it down.
Quinones has been taking Protandim for 2 weeks now and tells Extra,
I am sleeping better. I feel a lot better and also energized when I do wake up.
Primetime puts Protandim to the test tonight.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Well,
I believe it.
The Mayans talk about him being here, and in the later years, that he was here. He first came with his brother James.
Oh yeah.
But then in the later years, I suppose not knowing, you know, because like you see all the pieces and fragments, right? You find a couple of scrolls here, you find some documents there, you find some Tibetan Sanskrit that talks about the experiences in Tibet, and you then go to the Popol Vuh, and the Chilambalam, and so that was documented a long time ago, correct? Chilambalam, Popol Vuh. They're very old books. The earliest things that we have are Spanish translations. But they're ancient. They're like from when the Spanish first came here. And they talk about in the later years of Quetzalcoatl, the pale emperor, the pale prophet, the pale one, the bearded god, they speak about Jesus and Thomas being here. And they go quite extensively into the things that Thomas did here. As scholars or readers of the Bible and the ancient scripts will, you know, realize quickly, is number one, Jesus was asked after the crucifixion, which here's another mystery. Why do they always celebrate it as and use the statement when Jesus died? He didn't die, he ascended. If somebody ascends, they don't die, they live again. So yeah, I mean, you know, the stones are rolled back and Mary Magdalene's there, which is another story. But, you know, he ascended, so he lived again, and he turns around and he tells his disciples that he's going to other places. He's got places he must go because there are many sheep I have to attend to. There are many mansions in my Father's house. And so then goes on the other years of his ministry, which lasted a long time. And that's when he supposedly came to the Americas, which the church in Rome can never acknowledge. Because if they acknowledge it, they'd have to acknowledge that all the stuff that they did in the 16th century was a mistake. So they don't do that. They're sort of like George Bush, you know. They never make a mistake. But when you get into these ancient texts, they talk about this. They talk about Thomas being here. They talk about this whole way, you know. And that was not something that just happened back then. It was something that was carried all the way through to the Chagarguins in northeastern Guatemala, who are connected to the whole ghost dance thing with Huavoca. Because it's reported that they came from South America and they came up here when they were looking for the great white chief.
A lot of Indians that came down from Alaska and they came all the way from Tierra del Fuego.
But they came from all over the Americas.
All over.
You know, and they didn't have telegrams back then. They didn't have email.
Reservations, they were coming in from all over the east, all over the place. And then they had a big meeting in 1939, 1940. The Chagarguans hosted a big meeting down at Lake Pescuaro.
Mm-hmm.
There was 250,000 Indians at the first one and 400,000 Indians at the second one. I've got a picture on my website of the lake, the natural amphitheater. And the prophet Jose talked about what was going to happen in World War II and the preparations that they needed to make for after that. Mm-hmm. Interesting. It's all in that book, Great White Chief by Mother Mary Meyer.
Uh-huh. It's a very interesting book. People should read it.
Yeah, it is. It's very hard to get. What I need to do is, I've got the part about some of it up online on my website, but probably got to scan it all and just put it up, because it's out of print since it was published.
Well, we'll just take eminent domain and we'll make it an e-book.
Yeah.
You know.
Jesus.
But yeah, so these things, these myths, these legends, these stories, are they myths or are they stories? Does it really matter? You know, my thing is, does it really matter? You know, it's all a matter of faith. I was watching something on the news tonight about the statue of the Virgin Mary in Sacramento that supposedly has tears running down its face.
A picture of Jesus on somebody's tailgate.
And and they've got like thousands of people coming, you know, and only academic and scholars are going, well, it's absolutely wrong. It can't be what it is, you know. And it's okay to tear things apart, you know, but there's thousands of people sitting there in vigilance having their spirituality renewed, okay? Their faith is being renewed. There are reports of some healings going on, which is what happens at these kinds of things. And, you know, it's like for years, the Virgin of Guadalupe was not acknowledged here or in Rome by the church. Now, during the time of Pope John, they acknowledge the whole thing. And the miracles of Guadalupe are just amazing stories. And they happen to people, and it's a matter of, if you believe with your whole heart in something, and you believe in something good, and you believe in something spiritual, and you put 150% of what you are into it, miracles are going to happen. No, it's spirit talking to spirit, and that's what's lacking. You know, what's lacking is the minute anybody comes up with a story, you know, well, I went to the ceremony and there were rainbows in the sky at night. In the middle of the night, there were double rainbows in the sky, and then we prayed to the Lord of the Wind, and all of a sudden there were 200 mile an hour winds coming through, blowing everything all over the place. And then all of a sudden, there was this fireball and went across the sky, and the whole sky lit up. Well, you know, if you talk about that, the first thing you're going to do is get the whole letter from all the debunkers of people who aren't there, okay? And then they're going to go and they're going to contact, people are going to contact them, because there's always the, you know, disheartened people, the non-believers, the people who came that were closed, that didn't see this stuff. They could be standing right next to you, and you could be talking to a master, and they just look at you and they see you staring into space, and as far as they're concerned, you're talking to yourself. Do you know what I mean? Because there's no spiritual fabric in them. They've lost the ability to communicate with that part of them. I mean, you know, whatever happened to, you know, with spiritual beings having a human experience? That would mean that the spiritual part of us is what dominates.
Well, that's probably a good place to leave off. I've got also going to be talking with Jason Lee tonight. And sure appreciate you coming on. Had a cancellation,
well, if people want to read about it, it's really, there's some amazing things on my little website, and it's all about Christmas. It's all the things that you,
Robert Gosar,
that I'll bet you never knew.
And click on the snowman.
Just click on the snowman.
Well,
I figured the snowman couldn't be offensive to too many people.
But then
somebody wrote me an email and said, you realize that the snowman is the secret thing, is a secret symbol for crack cocaine groups.
Yeah,
and I was like, oh my God, where do these people come from,
takes,
you know?
It takes me back to the 80s and all that stuff. But, well, folks, this has been another edition.
So the thing is that December is a tremendous time of celebration. It's also a tremendous time of celebration for the feminine and Mother Earth and the rebirth of all things common. So I wish everybody a very Merry Christmas, a happy solstice, and you're getting your bread. Remember, it's the truth against the world.
Well, thanks a lot. We'll be seeing you on the flip side.
We'll see you on the trail.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet, all for $9.99, formerly priced at $29.99. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
You want to get an edge on turning back the clock with just a few pills? Who doesn't? Well, it's no longer science fiction, but science possibility, a potential breakthrough. As I found out firsthand, there may be a way to erase years, at least inside my body. Granted, it's down the road, but some scientists are wondering if a new pill I took might offer a very long life.
It may not look like the Fountain of Youth, but inside this nondescript building, I'm about to become part of an exciting experiment, a kind of guinea pig.
Dr. McCord, okay.
I'm here at the University of Colorado in Denver to meet Dr. Joe McCord, a world-renowned scientist.
This is pretty exciting stuff you're finding, huh?
It is. We're very excited about it.
His latest research could very well unravel the mystery of aging itself. And his decades of experiments may have the potential of adding years to people's lives and possibly prevent chronic diseases like cancer, diabetes, and heart disease. It all centers around this small yellow pill, and for me, it begins with a blood test.
There we go.
It wouldn't be the first time I've given blood for this company.
They want to check my levels of something called T-bars, which is a rough indicator of a person's actual age. T-bars can identify a condition known as oxidative stress, a kind of measure of the wear and tear on our bodies. Oxidative stress, like the rusting of an engine, is not a good thing.
Bad for the body.
Leading to disease.
Leading to disease and leading to malfunction, and importantly, leading to what we call aging. It is a slow progression of increasing oxidative stress. That's the main characteristic biochemically of the aging process.
The problem of aging begins with the very food we eat to give us energy. As our cells burn that food, they also release toxic chemicals. Those chemicals, you may know them as free radicals, react with all the components of our cells, literally bombarding them millions of times per second, damaging all our cells. The result? Oxidative stress. And we all have it. The body fights back with a system of defenses. It makes two antioxidant enzymes, catalase and SOD, whose job is to gobble up the free radicals before they can harm our cells.
So, doctor, how often do I take these?
And so, here I go. With that swallow, I've just become part of a potentially landmark scientific experiment.
Doesn't taste bad.
It's called Protandim, and tests on both mice and humans have already shown that it revs up the manufacture of those good enzymes in our bodies. More enzymes, fewer free radicals to harm us. Whether that will lead to longer life is still unknown. Experiments to see if mice live longer are about to get underway, but it's a tantalizing theory.
Right now, all we know is that this preparation decreases oxidative stress. Oxidative stress is not a disease, just like aging is not in itself a disease, but it's something that accompanies and is attached to many disease processes. So you can see the age-related...
Normally, oxidative stress, measured by those T-bars, increases with age. But in Dr. McCord's tests, taking just one pill of Protandim a day reversed that trend for everyone at every age, even for an 80-year-old.
They all are reduced to the level of oxidative stress that one would expect, frankly, in a newborn or a very young child.
Back to the oxidative stress levels of a child? It sounds too good to be true. Will Protandim work on me?
The scientific evidence is there. The pieces seem to make sense. The question is, does this translate into something that humans can take advantage of?
And so, ancient Eastern healing and modern Western medicine may soon be working together. High oxidative stress is associated with more than aging. It's been linked to hundreds of illnesses.
It's at the very center of many diseases. Liver disease, diabetes, emphysema, asthma. I've studied all of these. Strokes, heart attacks.
Even mental disease.
Yes.
Depression?
Alzheimer's disease, depression.
Dr. James Crapo with the National Jewish Medical Center in Denver is also researching Protandim for the company.
Are you saying that this could be a cure-all?
You're looking at something that will have a small impact, but an important impact.
We make no claims about curing any disease or preventing any disease. We hope that when enough studies are done, perhaps such claims might be able to be made in the future.
Clinical studies to assess Protandim in both diabetes and heart disease should start in 3 to 4 months. But what about my progress? After nearly 2 weeks now, it's time to get my results. Dr. McCord calculates the numbers. The result? My level of oxidative stress has declined dramatically.
45%, that's excellent.
Just look at where I fall on the graph, before and after.
Which, if extrapolated back, is the level you would see in a newborn baby.
Have we turned back the clock? Well, maybe not on the outside, but deep inside, within my cells, yes indeed.
Would you suggest I keep taking this supplement?
I would. I can't guarantee it's going to extend your life. I can't guarantee it's going to eliminate any diseases or cure any diseases.
But we do know that oxidative stress is part of those disease processes. And I don't want to wait until I'm 80 years old and find out that I should have taken it.
For more, go to our website at abcnews.com.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com.
That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Major universities and government agencies initiated and continue self-funded studies following the ABC Primetime Investigative Report you just viewed that originally aired in 2005. These studies continue to reveal more scientific evidence about Protandim's unique benefits. They are published in major scientific and medical journals. The next video will bring you up to date.
Developed after 40 years of research and exclusively for LifeVantage, Protandim is a true scientific breakthrough in anti-aging. Protandim has been reported on ABC, NBC, and PBS, featured in the Wall Street Journal, and described in CNN Chief Medical Correspondent Dr. Sanjay Gupta's book, Chasing Life, The Quest for Immortality. Protandim's creator, Dr. Joe McCord, is a world-renowned scientist and a pioneer in free radical biology. Dr. McCord is the discoverer of the key anti-aging enzyme, superoxide dismutase. His role in the discovery is so significant, the enzyme is measured in McCord units. For Dr. McCord's discovery of superoxide dismutase and his contributions in free radical biology, he was awarded the Elliott Cresson Medal. This medal is awarded to distinguished inventors and scientists, putting Dr. McCord in the same company as Pierre and Marie Curie, Alexander Graham Bell, Orville Wright, and Henry Ford. Dr. Joe McCord has devoted his life's work to the study of free radicals, their role in aging, and the many problems associated with aging. Consumers spend billions every year on antioxidants in the form of food and supplements, hoping to reduce these free radicals. But antioxidants from these sources can only eliminate one free radical for every one antioxidant molecule you consume. Protandim is scientifically proven to slow cellular damage caused by free radicals. Taking one Protandim one time per day for 30 days turns on these anti-aging enzymes in your body. Your own enzymes eliminate free radicals at a rate of 1 million to 1.
I think any other supplements that are designed to be antioxidant supplements probably are no longer needed because Protandim solves that problem in a much more effective way.
Protandim is a breakthrough poised to revolutionize the anti-aging industry. It is an entirely new and scientifically validated way to fight aging, reducing your oxidative stress levels to that of a 20-year-old after just 30 days.
We found, as many other scientists had documented, that there is a progressive increase in T-bars in your blood the older you get. When these same people took Protandim for 30 days, the age-dependent increase in lipid peroxidation was completely eliminated. After Protandim, we could no longer distinguish the 80-year-old from the 20-year-old.
Protandim is protected by 3 U.S. patents. Universities around the world continue to initiate and fund their own studies of Protandim and to evaluate how this anti-aging breakthrough can prevent and improve many of the hundreds of problems associated with aging.
Many academic scientists at a number of universities have begun studying Protandim because it represents a new tool. It represents a way of reducing oxidative stress that wasn't available before. There simply was not a good way of doing what Protandim does. Protandim interacts with the DNA in your cells and causes the cells to make more of a set of genes called survival genes. The ingredients in Protandim were actually selected because they are largely metabolized by the liver, which does not interfere with most prescription drugs, which are generally metabolized by the kidneys. So the general answer to that is yes, it is safe. The immediate benefits of Protandim are within several days, the biochemical markers of oxidative stress begin to decrease. And while these are immediate improvements, you may not sense that these things are happening, just as you can't sense what your cholesterol level is, if it's high or low. But nonetheless, these benefits start start happening within days of taking Protandim. The advantages to taking Protandim in the long term are that it protects your body from the relentless progression of free radical damage as we age. The anti-aging aspect of Protandim is one that accumulates over time. So the longer you take it, the more protection you will sustain. Missing a dose of Protandim is not a big problem. It takes about 2 weeks for the effects to go away. So if you miss it for 2 weeks, you're pretty much back to where you started from.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Good afternoon. These are on, I presume. I'd like to talk to you today, and do I have control of these slides, or is I do? Okay. Let's get through these really quick, because this is just because you have to get CMEs, and I have to tell you that I am on the Speakers Bureau for GSK, GlaxoSmithKline, and also a nutritional consultant for an HIV nutritional company named Biosource Therapeutics, which has nothing to do with what I'm talking about today. What I'd like to talk to you about is something that I find thoroughly fascinating. It is glutathione. It is one of the four endogenous antioxidants, and it is one that I must admit, despite 80,000 published articles in the English literature, through medical school, internship, residency, fellowship, and a fairly long time in academic medicine, I knew nothing about. It is a very interesting molecule because it exists in an accelerated or increased energy state. The energy state is, or increased energy state, is caused by the fact that it's got a free sulfhydryl group and therefore can easily donate the hydrogen to an electron and therefore quench a free radical. Now, let me tell you, because I think it's important, and it is a little bit of a divergence, but I learned about glutathione because of something that you probably all have seen in your practice, and that is a low uric acid. Now, when I was in medical school and when I was a professor of oncology, the only thing I knew about uric acid is when you had a kid that you were going to treat for leukemia, you put him on allopurinol to keep the uric acid down. I knew nothing about uric acid being low, except it kept appearing, and it appeared in about 20% of my patients, and that just didn't make sense. So I finally went into PubMed, and after stumbling around for a long time, I found out that uric acid is the last antioxidant your body uses when it's run out of everything else. When it's run out of gas, okay, it uses uric acid. Interesting. So if that's the last, the question then, what was the first? And that is where I got into glutathione. I've been coming to some of these meetings for a while, and glutathione is very important for a number of things, not all of which I'm going to go into today. But in point of fact, it has a great deal to do with not only well-being, okay, but aging well, or if you will, retarding the aging process. So I think it's very applicable. I'd like to, at the risk of repeating things that you already know, go over some of the things that glutathione is important about. Alone in the antioxidant world, okay, every other antioxidant, when it becomes oxidized, becomes itself a free radical. Glutathione doesn't. It actually recycles other antioxidants. In fact, the body considers it so important that up to 6% of the entire ATP expenditure or energy expenditure of the body may be used to synthesize and optimize glutathione levels. That's pretty impressive, 6% of the entire energy output of the body. It is also the only non-enzyme antioxidant that doesn't become a free radical and in fact has a very interesting corollary when it becomes oxidized, because what happens is it complexes to another spent glutathione molecule, and the compound then becomes GSSG, and GSSG has been shown in animal studies at least to promote and induce delta wave sleep. We all know the importance of that in terms of the aging process, so this, even in its used-up form, functions as a very useful product. It not only functions as an antioxidant itself, but alone again in the world of antioxidants, it is an absolutely essential component of antioxidant enzymes, namely glutathione peroxidase, and most importantly, the glutathione transferases. And I bring that up because glutathione transferase abnormalities have now been associated with virtually every cancer known to man, and probably with a lot more than that. And therefore, by promoting the production of glutathione transferases through improving glutathione, we may be doing even more than I'm able to talk about right now. In addition, if that were not enough, let's keep going. It's a chelator. In fact, it's 50% as effective as oral chelation in getting rid of mercury. It has an effect on other heavy metals, but they're not as pronounced as mercury, and mercury is pretty ubiquitous in an environment, so it kind of comes as a freebie. And it detoxifies organic pollutants, perhaps the best known one of which is the two-carbon fragment that we know as alcohol. And in fact, without glutathione, you ultimately get a hangover because you stop the process at acetaldehyde, which is phase one detox, and that in itself is a free radical, and obviously many of us may have felt the effects of that if we didn't have enough glutathione. Now, why is it important in aging? Well, these are old data, and I think they're probably not as robust as they should be, but I'll give you what is available now. Glutathione levels decrease with age. The data would suggest it's 1% a year beginning in the 20s. I think that's too little, too late, but that's only my opinion right now. I haven't proved it. There are some very interesting things, though. Age-matched normals, okay, reveal that anybody at, say, 45 who's had his first heart attack or has asthma or whatever other disease you want to use has a lower glutathione level than somebody of that age who's well. So disease causes decrease in glutathione and an accelerated decrease compared to normals. Glutathione happens to be, and this is perhaps the take-home message, it's the major protector of mitochondrial DNA. Mitochondrial DNA is that DNA within the cells that's responsible, if you will, for the electron transport chain that produces every bit of energy in your body. And we know from pathologic data that if you take a biopsy from a 90-year-old and compare it to a biopsy in a 5-year-old, the mitochondrial DNA in the 90-year-old is only 5% normal compared to the 5-year-old. So obviously we destroy our mitochondrial DNA, we destroy our energy, and we age. Maintenance of normal mitochondrial DNA is directly correlated, and it's got an R value above 9.9, with aging. So the higher your glutathione, the less you age. And I think
it's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Thank you. Let the truth